Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates episode by episode the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which aired on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fine Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, General Robert Iron Guts Kelly. And joining us this week in the VIP tent is Lieutenant Shannon. Hi, Shannon. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm very excited. We're here to talk about the 23rd episode of season 8, War Correspondent. This is Mike Farrell's Citizen Kane, and that it was written by him, directed by him, and of course, features him prominently. The original air date was March 3rd, 1980. There's a lot to talk about in this episode, but before we get to all that, of course, Shannon, we have to find out what's your MASH origin story.
Okay, so I come from MASH Blur, which you've talked about extensively in the past episodes, but that's not how I discovered MASH. That came much later. My parents were huge fans of MASH. They would have date nights and they would have pizza and beer and watch episodes of MASH. They held a goodbye, farewell, and amen viewing party.
Adorable.
I know. It's also very nerdy, but right.
That's what makes it adorable.
Well, yes, my mom was a huge BJ Honeycutt girl. And after my parents got married, my parents were fortunate enough to have my mom be a stay-at-home mom. I was born after the show aired. And, you know, at the time, MASH was on syndication. You couldn't go a channel without finding an episode, right? And so if an episode was on, she would leave it on. And at some point, toddler me took a very strong liking to BJ Honeycutt. And my mom has speculated over the years as to why that happened. It's either the mustache, because my dad had a very similar mustache at the time.
Or
the pink Henley, because, you know, it's all olive drab. It doesn't look appealing to a toddler, but the pink Henley stands out. And legend has it that if I wanted to watch MASH, and remember, I have no concept of MASH, right? I don't know what it is. I would smack the TV, and it was one of those big box TVs that sat on the floor, right? And just say, BJ, 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 over and over again. And if mom could find an episode, she'd leave it on. If not, she would have to break my BJ loving heart and tell me BJ's not on right now. So it's just always been there from the start.
There was that show BJ and the Bear. That didn't feature BJ Honeycutt, but I mean, Maybe that could have tied you over until the show came back on or something.
I don't know. Did BJ and the Bear have a big mustache?
He did not. He had an ape with him, but he did not. That's what that show was about. It was a trucker that drove around with a chimpanzee in the cab.
I don't think that would have worked.
That is adorable that both your parents being such uber nerd fan, like they were kind of pioneers, right? Being that level of a fans for a show that was not like a Star Trek show or Doctor Who, which kind of engendered that kind of obsessive detailing and watching. And but they were that for MASH. That's great.
Yeah, they were into it.
How did you get caught up on the show? You said you watch it in reruns. Did you eventually get the VHSs or DVDs or something? Like, how did you finally get caught up to the whole series?
So it wasn't until I was in college at some point where I got my hands on a DVD box set. It was either for my birthday or for Christmas. And, you know, up until that point, growing up, I had just watched episodes when I found them on TV. And I had no, right? And that's, God, I'm dating myself here, but that's also like the internet wasn't as extensive as it is now, right? So I had no concept of episodes that I hadn't seen. I had never seen the show from start to finish. It wasn't until I got the DVDs that when I was finally able to watch it from start to finish. And that's probably the better way to do it, right? I'm older, I can understand it, appreciate it. It's not just purely a toddler loving BJ Honeycutt.
I mean, you, Shannon, I have to say, you just mentioned that you weren't around when the show was airing.
Correct.
I was. So I don't want to hear about that. You're feeling old right now. All right.
When you think about how many people from MASH Blur you've had on, who are just discovering the show because they're in their 20s. It's incredible,
It's
first off.
amazing. It's a wonderful thing. It's an absolutely
It's
wonderful thing.
wonderful.
So, all right, I do have one other question for you regarding your dad and BJ. So you said it was the mustache. Was your dad constitutionally similar to BJ in terms of his how he carried himself, how he spoke? Was it or was it just the visual?
I don't know. I think it's more just the visual. I mean, remember, I was a toddler. I don't know why I took a liking to this character on TV, but now seeing BJ, right, and how he is, I gotta think it's more just the mustache. My dad isn't, he's not completely like BJ, but he's also not like BJ, if that
All
makes
right.
sense.
Fair enough. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I as a kid, I always wanted to be BJ. That's just, and that was from a young age, even though probably I'm more like the neediness of Hawkeye than I care to admit. And my need to like want attention and stuff, because I am doing a podcast about the show, but like nevertheless, BJ
Right.
was the one I always wanted to be more like. So
Yeah.
and I was picking, I was, not that much older than you when I was watching the show. So I was picking up on vibes,
Oh, okay.
right? You know,
Right.
so it's he's re he's radiating. Mike Farrell as a character is radiating something clearly
Oh.
that people are picking up on, and you picked up on as a very small child.
As a very small child and fixated on it as I got older completely. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. About how long did it take? Well, no, when you were in college and you were watching the show, were you like the only one? Was everyone else like,
Yeah.
what the hell are you watching?
Yeah. And so, even growing up, it was one of my favorite shows. But, like, it wasn't cool to talk to your friends in middle school about MASH. That was our parents' show, right? And I don't want to talk to my friends' parents about MASH. And same in college. They're like, what are you watching? How do I say it's like the greatest show without, they don't get it, right? And hopefully someday they got it, but.
Well, there's that weird window in pop culture where things are just old, right?
Yeah.
And then if they hang around long enough, they become, of course, cool again, because now they're like a vintage relic of an era from
Right.
long ago. You know what I mean? But there's that weird when it's like, like if you have stuff around their house that's like 10 years old. I don't know about you, but like you feel more ready to get rid of it because it just feels old. But if it
And
hangs
then
around your house for 30 years, it's all of a sudden it's vintage and
it's vintage and you
you
don't want to
won't
get
get
rid
rid
of
of it.
it.
So there
Right.
you go. Exactly.
Yeah.
So BJ, excuse me, BJ, MASH has now come to the other side of that, whereas you just mentioned, like 20-year-olds are discovering it because they're like, wow, this show is half a century old, and there's like a transvestite clerk and there's the doctor and there's all this stuff, all this crazy
Right.
stuff that you would not expect that aired on broadcast television in front of 30 million people,
Exactly. And
half
it's
a
so
century.
exciting that they're discovering it and watching it and bringing different set of life experiences and a different lens to view everything. And they're breathing new life into something without even realizing they're doing it, which,
Absolutely.
right. And so
Absolutely.
MASH is just never going to go away.
As an OG fan, that has really been a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah.
To see that like been grabbed onto by so many young people, and as you mentioned, they have their own crazy ass theories about it and stuff like that. But that's great. That's absolutely
And
fantastic. I absolutely love
it's
all of
great.
it.
And coming from MASH Blur, I came to it with my own sense of opinions and thoughts and ideas on the show, and it's been great to be challenged but to of those and to watch episodes like War Correspondent in a different way.
Absolutely. Well, all right. That good segue. Thank you,
Hey,
Shannon.
look at
you're
that.
professional. So yeah, we're here to talk about War Correspondents. I mean, this is a Mike Farrell joint. he did the lead of it. He wrote it and he directed it. So let's get to the synopsis. A bus full of wounded arrive, escorted by a surprising guest, journalist Aggie O'Shea, a genuine celebrity. Aggie is following a couple of soldiers as they make their way through their tour in Korea and then reporting on what she experiences. She meets with the doctors and Margaret afterward, and Hawkeye is shameless in his attempts to romance her, but Aggie seems only interested in BJ. While in post-op together, Aggie is pretty flirty with BJ, continually rebuffing Hawkeye's advances. Her interest in BJ is so apparent that everyone in the camp notices, even the wounded. That night, they share a drink in the Oak Club, and Aggie lays it right on the line, letting BJ know that she's very interested in him, leaving BJ flush and stunned into silence. The next morning, everyone in camp is talking about BJ and Aggie. After a rough night's sleep, he has a talk with Aggie in the X-ray room where he goes so far as to ask Aggie how long she can stay in Seoul. Her answer is, as long as you want. BJ is cranky and humorless amid all the rumors, storming off insulted when he catches everyone in the mess head joking about it. Hawkeye gets BJ to open up, and BJ reveals that while nothing has happened between him and Aggie, he is starting to develop real feelings for her. For the first time, someone other than Peg has really caught his eye, and he's feeling torn up about it. While one of the soldiers Aggie is profiling has to go back into surgery, Hawkeye assists and brings up Aggie and the young man, Scotty. At first, BJ is snippy to Hawkeye, but Hawkeye keeps going, pointing out how a war can bring two very different people together, people who, back at home, wouldn't have much in common. Later that night, BJ and Aggie talk again, and BJ confesses that while he has feelings for her, he can't give up his one lifeline, the one he has to his family. Aggie confesses that she loves BJ, and they embrace and say goodbye. Weeks later, a care package from Aggie arrives with presents for everyone. Potter's gift is an original drawing by Aggie, one of BJ with a life preserver around him, emblazoned with the words San Francisco. When Potter asks what that means, BJ answers, "Beats me." Okay, Shannon, as a BJ fan, this is about as BJ an episode as you could possibly want.
That's right.
So, of course, we're going to break it down, be like we always do. But overall thoughts on War Correspondent?
Overall thoughts. So on the surface, obviously, it's an episode about BJ being tempted again. But I think, sure, it's about, you know, infidelity and sex and desire and all these, you know, exciting things. But when you get right down to it, it's really about BJ not being able to be emotionally truthful with himself. It's about him not having control over his feelings and his emotions. It's about what do you do when you realize that a situation that you've been thrown into creates a sense of artificial intimacy. And what are you supposed to do with that? Is the situation that you're in enough to sustain that? And I think this episode works for me because of the placement in the series. It happens later in the series, whereas Hanky Panky happens early in season 5. I think if you picked up War Correspondent and made a few edits where you take out any reference to Carrie from Hanky Panky and you put it where Hanky Panky was, it wouldn't work. But having it where it is in the series, we've already seen BJ start to deteriorate. We've seen in BJ Papasan where he, you know, screams at, you know, and yells when the family has gone away after the bombing. We've seen most recently in Period of Adjustment where he obviously has a breakdown. And now he's struggling again, but emotionally. So, yes, it's a temptation line, but it's also another way that the war is causing BJ to just break down.
Yeah, I agree that this episode, this story would not work early in BJ's run on the show, right? It has
Not
to, he has to have been through a lot of other stuff. And I do appreciate that it is at least a variation on that idea that it is not just about physical attraction. It's about, you know, emotional attraction. And Susan St. James, who plays Aggie O'Shea, is fantastic in the role. You know, she's been in some movies, mostly a TV actress. She was in McMillan and Wife with Rock Hudson. Just after this, she would be on the show Kate and Ally, which ran for 6 seasons. She was on that show with Jane Curtin from Saturday Night Live. She's still in stuff nowadays, but of course not as much. She's been long married to NBC producer Dick Ebersol, who ran Saturday Night Live at one point anyway. But she is adorable in this role. Like, she really is funny and flirty and sexy and cute and obviously, you know, can kind of parry and thrust with, The jokes back and forth. And I think, maybe we talked about this when we did the Hanky Panky episode. I never liked that episode that much because I found, first of all, I don't like the idea of BJ cheating on Peg, period. I just don't like it. And secondly, I just never found that character that BJ sleeps with that compelling that I was like, it's like, really? Arrested Development, kind of like her, kind of
Sure,
like that.
right.
But Aggie, I get it. I get it. I get why she would sweep in and you'd be like, oh my, wow, she is just amazing. So it all fits together. I would love to know if Susan St. James was always going to be, was she the first choice to play
I would love to
Aggie?
know that as well because her and Mike Ferrell have so much chemistry. I don't know if you've ever seen the TV movie that they did together, Sex and the Single Parent.
No, I have not.
Oh my gosh. If you good luck trying to find a
Was
version of
that before this or after this?
I want to say it's around the same time.
Okay.
Good luck trying to find a version of it that doesn't look like it was filmed on a potato. It's so hard to find, but like what I've seen in that horrible version, they have so much chemistry in that, and it even more chemistry in this episode. And so the fact that they work so well together is another reason this episode works and just hits a bit harder than Hanky Panky ever did.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. By the way, I'll tell you, everybody, obviously, a couple times this season, I have bothered poor Mike Farrell for information about various episodes. I did not bother him for this one. I probably should have, considering this was such a big one. But after talking to him about Heal Thyself and Dreams, I was like, you know what? Leave the poor man alone. So I didn't bother him for this episode.
Oh, but Rob, there is one thing about this episode. If I could talk to that man and just ask him if he meant to do one thing, and we'll get to it, but I
Okay.
may need you to find out for me.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Maybe I will push it. He's always been nothing but so sweet. He's always like, no, it's fine. But I'm always just like, okay, I don't want to,
Of course, you don't want to bother. I
I
get
don't want to be like, all right, dude, how about this episode? In
it.
episode 12, I'm like, all right, just relax. So, okay. So, the show opens with the PA announcing that there is wounded arriving, and we see the ambulance roll in. Hawkeye and BJ, it's written and directed by Mike Farrell. We see the credit there. So Hawkeye and BJ get on the bus and they immediately meet Aggie O'Shea, and they use the line about when did this line start using stewardesses, which is a joke they will use literally, I think, the next season. The very same joke where they, I think it's the one with the USO troop. They use
Oh, right.
that same exact joke. And of course, Hawkeye is flirting with her instantly. And I want to know your opinion on this. It on the one hand, it is like, oh, Hawkeye, all right, like, can the woman just be here to do this thing? At the same time, he's so over the top and she's so good at deflecting, and not that she should have to do that, but it's like, I don't know, I feel like it bothers me less because it is so cartoonish that she is, it's sort of like she's just like, I know you're just goofing around or whatever. I don't know. Am I what do you what are your thoughts on that?
No, I agree completely. And Hawkeye is over the top in this entire episode. I mean, he's always over the top, but this is like cranked up another level.
Yeah.
But it's funny because we, the viewer, know Hawkeye, right? We know that he's harmless. He doesn't mean anything malicious by what he's doing, and so we can laugh about it. But he really cranks it up with her, which is fascinating all in it of itself.
Yeah, and he has the line when they're talking about they've mentioned this to Potter, and Potter hasn't met her. He's already in surgery, and they talk about, from her reporting, it sounds she's like a grizzled war veteran. And Hawkeye says she's about as far away from grizzly as you can get, but I wouldn't mind seeing her bear. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
Okay. Like,
Margaret is like, all right, okay, look at it, typical Pierce or whatever. But again, it's there are just some other there are some episodes where he's genuinely flirting and I'm a little eye rolly, and then there's other ones where he's sort of playing this character and it's easy to just dismiss. It's kind of like when he flirts with Margaret in the Dreams episode where she wants to go
yes.
back to her tent and he's like, you want to see some selected choice. So he doesn't really mean it. It's
He doesn't
almost
really.
like, he's like on autopilot. kind of the way he's
And
doing it.
I think that's what he's doing in this episode, but it's also a great contrast to BJ the entire episode thinking that him and Aggie are being discreet about anything that could be going on.
So then they were talking about Aggie's drawing style, and Winchester says, "Oh, her style is sort of stark and graphic." And he compares it to Potter's, where he says his is more the quality of draw this dog and win five free lessons, which is like he's really being a dick.
No, he absolutely is. He
He
absolutely
went
is.
out of his way to insult Potter. Like, what are you like? He's really feeling quite confident. Of course, her whole style here, Aggie's whole thing is that she is reporting on the war and she's sending back reports and she's also doing these drawings. That's so it's like, it's a combination. Now that is similar to a real life person. I mean, there were multiple guys that did this, but the one who's most famous was a man named Bill Malden. Excuse me. He served in World War II. He won multiple Pulitzer Prizes for his journalism. And they even mention him at one point in the episode. So I like that. I like that the fact that they're not trying to suggest that, that Bill Malden doesn't exist in this universe. It's like, oh no, Aggie is a version of Bill Malden. Okay, that's great. I've read a couple of Bill Malden's collections of art, and there really is, incredibly beautiful. Not only is the reporting very good, the artwork is just really, really nice as well. And so, trying to imagine trying to come up with drawings in a while well, you're getting shot at by Nazis is like pretty
Can
amazing stuff.
imagine.
So they're all talking to Aggie. We actually even see some of her drawings. I would love to know who did those, right? Whether
Me
that was
too.
somebody on staff that just knew how to draw, or did they have to go to the Fox Art Department? They probably went to the Fox Art
They
Department
probably
and
went to the Fox Art.
talking
Yeah,
talking to that.
probably.
Once again, I would love to know, do those still exist somewhere? Probably not. Again, I think maybe most of these props got thrown out, but I like to think somebody on the MASH staff took them home.
I hope so. I'll sleep better at night thinking that they're safe
So,
somewhere.
she's talking to Hawkeye and Margaret and Winchester and BJ, and she says, "Look, I have connections. I can get anything, and I know you guys don't get a lot here." And Margaret asks for some bubble bath, and Winchester says, "There's nothing in Tokyo that I want, except I want to be sent to Tokyo." What would you ask for in this scenario, Shannon? What kind of creature comfort, if you were stuck in a situation like this, do you think you would reasonably ask for?
Oh my gosh. Wow. Way to put me on the spot. I hadn't given that one much of thought. I mean,
Hawkeye asked for a bottle of scotch, by the way. I left Hawkeye out. He asked for a bottle of scotch.
I mean, I gotta think I would ask for something like a Diet Pepsi, like a fountain Diet Pepsi, to be quite honest.
I get, all right, let me scope it down and make it easier. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Do you think it would be, you just mentioned, you think it would be more food related or a creature comfort related or like a book? Like it would be something to entertain you? What do you think would your brain would first go to?
I think I would gravitate towards something that is calming and reminiscent of home. So whether it's a certain food or if it's, a nice blanket or something like that, just something to calm me down, keep me calm.
I think I would. I like your idea of a blanket. I think I would, considering how cold it gets. I think I would say I wouldn't waste it on food because I'd be like, well, that's like two things, two meals, and then it's gone. I would ask for like,
That's not very BJ Honeycutt of you, is
no,
it?
no, it isn't. Well, he doesn't, and you have to wonder whether he is. Do you? Okay, we're here to overanalyze this episode.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
They have not suggested yet that they're flirting, right? She's just being nice to all of them. But do you get the idea that like he's already pulling back a little?
Oh, Rob, I'm so glad you asked because if you
We did not prepare this ahead of time, or this is not a
No, we did
setup.
not. This is just us overanalyzing BJ Honeycutt. So, if you look at his body language in this scene, his hands are firmly planted on his legs. He is sitting up straight, he is rigid, and that man normally is lounging. His feet are normally kicked up on something. And so I have to wonder if there is already a physical attraction. And again, if you remember back in Hanky Panky, one of his biggest fears with Carrie, that woman, was that she was so close and so vulnerable. And I have to wonder if subconsciously he is guarding himself because he already is physically attracted to Aggie.
Right, because one, as we'll learn in this episode, part of the reason she finds him so attractive is that he's so reserved, and
Yes.
it's Hawkeye doing the full court press that
Yeah.
she finds just completely uninteresting. Now, there might also be some physical aspects. She might just simply find BJ to be physically attractive the way she's not attracted to Hawkeye. It's just a
Right.
personal taste or whatever. But I have to think that it seems a little un-BJ like to not have an answer, right? To just kind of be like, I don't know, peanut butter. Like, really? That's the only thing you can think of? And I have to wonder, is he already pushing back a little because he just doesn't want to? And, you know, when Hawkeye's flirting with her, he and him and Winchester get the hell out. They are like, all right, fine, we're leaving, you know, because they're like, oh, we don't
Right.
want to get in the way of this, even though they know nothing's probably going to happen. He's whatever Aggie is finding attractive in BJ, he's already layering it on thick, even if he doesn't necessarily know that that's what he's doing.
That's a good point. I also think though that if you were, asking BJ what he wants, we know he wants to go home. He wants to be back with Peg and he wants to be back with Aaron. And he knows that he can't ask for that. And so it's a wasted thing. And so he asked for something that's not a distraction or a temporary indulgence. He wants something that's a bit more reminiscent of home, which is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, something that's so Americana and so simple that it intrigues Aggie immediately that that's what you want. Why?
I don't think they've ever shown peanut butter on at the 477th. Would you think it would be one of the easiest foods to get up
Get.
there because it comes in jars and it doesn't go bad for
And it
long
doesn't go
periods
bad,
of
right?
time, right? You would think that would be pretty. You think that would be pretty plentiful
You
at the
would think he
477th, but I don't think
I
we've
would
ever
I was
seen
shocked.
it.
I don't think we have, which is shocking.
So they leave, and then Hawkeye again keeps trying, and she is like, I'm leaving, I'm gonna go bunk with Margaret. And then he's like, look, if there's anything you want, and he even says, you know, anything you desire, and he leans on that, what can it be? And she's like, well, I actually do have one question. And he's like, oh, I don't know the answer. If I don't know the answer, I'll make one up. But she says, is BJ always so quiet? And of course, that means, you know, Hawkeye is his face falls,
It's great.
realizing that this is quite literally the last thing that he wants to be asked about is BJ. And I will pull something out from the Young Rob Kelly Chronicles. I will say, many, many years ago, I was at a comic book convention, and I was with a bunch of my guy friends, and we met a bunch of women that were there at the same time. And I ended up flirting with one of them. I didn't mean to, but we just sort of did. And she was showing an interest in me. And by the way, I'm completely clueless on that stuff. So
Okay.
a woman has to be incredibly obvious about her interest because I don't pick up on it. No pun intended. I have no radar for this stuff at all. But I knew she was interested. And as that was happening, a fellow friend was like, said that he was sort of interested in her too. And I was like, well, that sucks to be you then. Because this is like,
Rob.
it's not happening.
That's so
So
funny.
I was sort of the BJ in the scenario. I'm like,
Yeah.
no, get that idea out of your head, buddy. So this is fine. Not one of my finest moments, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah, right.
So anyway, we're not still together. We are then in post-op, and BJ is talking to one of the patients. This is Jackson, played by actor Calvin Levels. He's been in a bunch of movies like Point of No Return with Bridget Fonda, the classic 80s comedy Adventures in Babysitting, the Brad Pitt movie Johnny Suede. So he's got a decent career. Aggie comes by and is sort of hovering. And again, you can sort of almost tell by like her body language. She's got her arms tucked behind her and she's kind of swaying a little bit and being really cute and kind of getting in his physical, BJ's physical space. At one point, he starts to walk away and she follows him and she's great. I mean, she's not overdoing it, but she's like I just said, like I mentioned earlier, I'm clueless on the stuff. Even I can see this, right? I think anyone could pick up on this, that she's clearly interested in talking to this guy.
She's very interested in talking to him. And at first, BJ, you know, he's clueless. He doesn't really pay her any attention. But the second that she says the Yalu pages, he is hooked. He looks absolutely shocked. He looks delighted. And then when she beats him to the punch with, you know, what does he say? Word games with the writer. That's like, and it's not like BJ to not have a witty quip locked and loaded. And for her to beat him to the punch with needling a nurse. And it's incredible, because up until that point, you only really see BJ word sparring with Hawkeye. And so for her to lock him in and get his attention, doing that same type of sparring is very interesting, and it's very delicious.
Yep. So then Hawkeye comes in riding his bike. He literally rides his bike into post-op. What luck that both doors just happen to be open. It's never happened before in the history of MASH, but they just happen to both be open, just enough space for Hawkeye to ride in on his bicycle. He's singing. He is just to crib a line from the Steve Martin comedy LA Story, where he says, "I was showing off," which is the idiot's way of being interesting, which is exactly what he's doing, because she's clearly radiating she's not interested, especially because of the way he's behaving. So he's like, "Oh, well, maybe you'll still like it if I do it 20% more."
Right. He just cranks it up a bit more. He
cranks it up more. Like, no, it's not going to work. So no. Then they meet another patient, Scotty, played by actor Brad Wilkin. He had some TV credits, Happy Days, The Walton's Little House on the Prairie. And she is holding his hand, and she says, you know, she says to Scotty, "This is the doctor who put you back together." And he mentions and early says, "My chest feels kind of funny." And BJ's like, "That's a little far north. You were hitting the belly." And he says, "It doesn't exactly hurt. It just feels kind of heavy." And, you know, they're layering in that obviously something is a little wrong, but, you know, they think it's just normally post-operative discomfort. It's fine. Then Potter arrives. He apologizes for not saying hi to Aggie early in the morning. And they talk about that they both like to draw. And then he says, he mentions about, he says, you're a sight for sore eyes. And he says it's about time someone represented the working man's point of view around here, which is a great, great line, right? That's a reminder that Potter may be the brass, but he's always got one foot in coming from the cavalry. And, and they even remark on it. They said that's an unusual that's a usual comment to come from regular army. And then BJ even says he's not your regular army. So great little bit of Potter for an episode that he doesn't have much to do. That's a great little character beat. Yeah.
And before we move on from this scene, I just want to point out that when Scotty is complaining about the heaviness in his chest and its post-operative discomfort, that meaning essentially that there's nothing to worry about, right? It's harmless. Don't give it a second thought. That line of thinking, that thread of Scotty's physical decline parallels with BJ spiral the entire episode. At that moment, when this happened, when they talk about post-operative discomfort, BJ nothing's happening as far as BJ is concerned. It's harmless, right? It's just word sparring. It's nothing to give it a second thought. And you'll see as the episode progresses, every single time that there is a change in Scotty's physical well-being, something has just happened between Aggie and BJ to cause BJ to spiral a little bit more. It's a great parallel.
Oh, wow. I don't think I've ever noticed that in all the times I've watched this episode. I don't think I've ever really tracked that.
We will talk about it as we keep going.
Okay. All right. So, and again, Aggie gets great little bit where they talk about that they both paint, and he's like, you know, it's nothing. Don't, you know, and he's like, please, you know, no, I'm no Norman Rockwell. And she's like, well, you don't need, we already have one of those. And then she's like, I really want to see your work. And he's like, don't laugh. And she says, scout's honor, not a giggle, which again, just is just super adorable. Right,
really
just the
is
way
cute.
she puts that, of like, okay, don't worry, don't worry. And of course, Hawkeye is like, oh, sure, let me show you my old etchings ploy. which, let me ask, when you were, when you say you've, first saw this episode, I don't expect you to remember when you first saw it, but when that line came up, do you think you had any idea what that meant?
Absolutely
That
not.
turn? Yeah, that's an old timey phrase,
Yeah, absolutely not.
right?
I mean, and that there's a lot of those in this
Yes.
series, right? Completely, where you just have no idea. I mean, I had to research what some of the things meant in this episode, right? Just you just don't know.
I will tell you, there was I learned what etchings meant from an old comic book because
Oh.
I used to read back when I was a kid. My favorite comic book was Justice League of America, and there was a running gag that these two superheroes would flirt. One of them, the younger one, would flirt with this other one, and at one point he said, "Do you want to come see my etchings?" And I didn't know what that meant. And I think I must have been like 8 when I read it, and I think I asked my dad, like, what's an etching?" And he
Right.
told me what it was, and then I was able to kind of piece it together from context of like, oh, it's like a move that men made of like, you want to come see my paintings? You want to come see my? Oh, okay, all right, and there
Got
you
it,
go. So
right.
that, so by the time it came to MASH, I knew what it was. So
You knew what it was.
thank you, Justice League of America, for introducing that concept to me. Aggie says, BJ, remember you promised me an interview, and of course, Hawkeye is. Guy is furious.
Battled him.
And then he's like, you're frothing at the mouth. And I love that he's kind of laughing at Hawkeye, right? He's just like, and of course, even though he's not interested in Aggie, he's enjoying the fact that
That
Hawkeye is
Hawkeye,
not getting anywhere with her.
yeah, he's not making any progress with Aggie, and BJ is relishing in that.
Very happy about that.
Oh, yeah.
So then we're in Potter's office, and he starts showing Aggie some of his paintings. There's a moment where she points to the painting of Radar, and she says, "Who's the cute little guy?" And he says, "Used to be my clerk. He's gone home now. Fine lad." That was always cut in syndication. I never saw that until I got the DVDs. And I think this might be something to a total by the time we get to season 11, but I'm like, does Radar get the most mentions of any of the departed cast members? Because he gets like
Ooh.
4 mentions this season alone.
Yeah,
Even though he
that.
left the latest, I feel like this season was full of, because there was the one where Klinger pretends to be Radar. Then there's the one in
Right.
season 9 where they get the letter from Radar. Like,
Right.
I know that Henry gets mentioned, but I have to wonder, like, did Radar,
I
I think
think he
Radar
did.
clocked the most mentions.
I think if you had to, I think you'd find that it's Radar, Henry, and then Trapper that get the most
Probably.
mentions.
Yeah. With Frank a
With
distant
Frank,
fourth.
yeah. Oh, I forgot all about Frank. Well, that tells you everything.
Yeah, for there. Yeah, exactly. So, he is showing Aggie all the paintings, and then she says, they get to this great bit where she says, "Oh, this man I recognize," and it's the portrait that he did of Winchester from season 6. And I love it. She's like, why does he look so angry?" And Potter's like, "Oh, I hadn't noticed."
Notice. I know, it's so great.
I love that. I love that they kept the painting from season 6, because that's from the Winchester tapes, where he's
The
like, "Your face
Winchester
is
tape.
finished," and it's
I'm not a bumper.
yeah, stop, yeah, stop, don't redden your face, I'm out of umber. I love that. That was a great bit.
Of the paintings, I also really love Potter's thumb being the highest hung painting. That to me is just chef's kiss because it does deserve to be the highest hung painting.
He's the proudest of his own.
Yes.
I have to say, like, I don't have any of my own artwork on my walls. Feels a little weird to have
A
my
little
own
weird.
artwork on walls, you know? I mean, I know Potter's only has so much to hang up, but still, it's a
But
little
he's, yeah,
weird.
he's
Don't,
an eccentric fellow, so
yeah,
it.
don't hang up your own work. So anyway, they have a very nice little conversation, and they just sort of are talking as equals in terms of artists. So then we go to the O Club. And they are sitting at this table together. It is just the two of them. We notice that Aggie is now kind of dressing like the Swamp Rats, right? She's got
Yeah,
this kind
she's
of
in a Hawaiian
Hawaiian
shirt.
shirt kind of thing.
Yep.
And she starts talking about how much she knows sports. and which they never really established that BJ cared about sports, but nevertheless, he's kind of quizzing her, and he's almost doing a kind of thing that, like, incels do now, right? Where it's like a woman has like a Rolling Stone shirt on. It's like, name five
Name one
songs.
song. Yeah.
How about mind your effing business? How about that?
Exactly.
You
Yeah.
know? But it's good, but it's good natured. And it's more to explain that she has crowbarred herself into a man's profession, as what was thought of as a man's profession, and that she's obviously really quite adept. And we then they the whole scene, I guess, directed by Mike Farrell, is a series of over the shoulder close-ups. We get over the shoulder of Aggie and over the shoulder of BJ. All the shots of BJ, he is red-faced.
He is
He is red.
very.
So I don't know whether that's just really good acting on Mike Farrell's part, or Mike Farrell was on some level
Red
pretty charmed by Susan St. James, which again, I can understand.
I can understand. I like to think it's the latter. That he was just charmed by her because it helps bring BJ's increasing in uncomfortableness, not with Aggie, but with what Aggie is doing to him internally from an emotional perspective. It just makes it even better and more delicious and more interesting to dive into.
Yep. And actually, this is the scene where they mentioned Bill Mauldin. She says, we might work with Bill Mauldin overtones. And they are, I mean, she is full court press.
Yes.
She is full court press. And you have to figure that maybe half a dozen people can overhear this because they're all about 2 feet away from each other.
Right.
And it's nice because, of course, from BJ's perspective, he didn't go into this with the plan to flirt, so he didn't know that there was anything untoward that was going to happen. But nevertheless, of course, we're going to find out that it spread through the camp like wildfire because everyone can hear this because she's laying it on thick.
She is laying it on thick, but BJ, well, let me back up here. There, I've scoured the internet, looked to see what people think about this scene in particular and how Aggie is acting. And it seems that viewers fall into two separate camps. One, she's way too pushy. She's coming on way too strong, especially knowing that he's married. And two, BJ is a willing participant because he never tells her to stop. Right, he could get up and walk out of the O's Club at any point, but he doesn't. He tries to first convince himself that there's something wrong with her when she asks him point blank after going over all of her accomplishments. She's like, "Did I say something wrong?" And he goes, "No, yes." Like he's trying to convince himself that there's something wrong with this woman, and then to follow up, like he's still trying to convince himself, he says, "You don't find a lot of women in your line of work." Like, that's not the compliment that he thinks that it is. And it's like he's trying to convince himself that there's something wrong with that idea of a woman being in that profession. And so I'm of the opinion that BJ is playing along. He eventually starts playing along with it. Aggie point blank asks him, "May I be direct?" And BJ could have easily said no.
No, he says, please. I like the way you
He's
beat
like,
around the bush or whatever he says.
right. And he plays into it when he says, "You're an extraordinarily attractive woman, but," and she tells him, "Back up." He does. Like, it's not that she's laying it on thick or coming across too strong. She's just going along with what BJ is allowing to happen. He could have stopped it, and he chose not to.
Yeah, she's being very direct. I mean, you got to figure she doesn't have a lot of time, kind
Right.
of, and then she does this bit where she says, you have this gentleness that's in the midst of all this craziness that's very attractive. And I kind of love the way she sort of like slightly lowers the register of her voice a
Yes.
little bit, and she's making a lot of direct eye contact,
He
right? And
is.
we can just see, and the way his arms are folded. And then
And he
she's.
kind of like puffs his cheeks out a bit, and you can tell he's not comfortable with it. But I have to wonder, is he not comfortable with what she's saying, or is he not comfortable because he can feel himself falling more and more into this game that she's playing or starting to play?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't expect this, right? He did not expect this. And so now this conversation has taken a turn that he was not planning on, and he's a little overwhelmed by it. He likes it because this beautiful woman is flirting with him. How you're not going to like that. But nevertheless, this is not, he would not have done this had he known that was the turn this was going to take, I think,
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But he's going along with it. And then she even says, well, you haven't said or done anything that could be remotely considered a pass in spite of all the openings I've given you. And then she's like, I don't know whether to be flattered or insulted. And I mean, she can see his wedding ring.
Is
So
he wearing his ring in the scene?
you don't see it on his hand, the hand that's holding the beer, but I can't imagine that it's not on his other hand.
I
I
would, I'd
mean,
have to, yeah, we'd have to look because I can't remember now if he's actually wearing it, if you see it ever in
I don't
this
think you see it.
scene.
I think the
He
only
just
hand you
assumed.
see is his right hand where he's picking up the beer, and so maybe it's on his left. I mean, I wear my wedding ring on my left hand, so
Right.
but I mean she has to know, right? She has to
Right.
know, she could talk to anybody, and she's already bunked with Margaret.
Well,
She's
and she
you
says as
know.
much that she asks, because she says to him, so you're married.
Yeah.
And admit that, like, I asked someone, reporter, remember?
Yeah.
So she
Yeah.
knows.
What do you think of that? What do you think of that just as a person? About my that she knows he's married, but she's making a play for him anyway. Is that doesn't, I don't know.
I mean, I understand why people take issue with that as in general. I think in this context, BJ has been down this road before. Again, he could have gotten up and walked away, and put an end to all of it, and he just didn't. Does that make what Aggie is doing, going after him in the way that she is and so hardcore, right? Probably not, but they both are adults. They can both take responsibility for it.
Yeah, I mean, right. This is a 24-minute episode, and
Right.
we're being introduced to a new character that we're never going to see again, as far as we know.
That's fair.
And we have to draw her in broad strokes very quickly, and it could be that she's just like, well, maybe he's really unhappy in his marriage, and maybe he's miserable, and I'm going to take
Right.
this opportunity anyway. But it is interesting that she knows he's married, and yet she is, she's
She
going
does.
for
And
it.
but and she lays it all out with, I'm going to be here for 48
48 hours,
hours,
yep.
and the feeling is very mutual about being very attracted to him. And, she trying to figure out how the best way to phrase this is because she almost went one step too far because she had just said to him, I'll quit while I'm ahead, and then says these two things. But at the same time, it can be read as she's just laying the facts out for him. It's up to BJ if he's going to do anything with that, right? Giving him the control of the situation, but who knows?
Yeah, and she really plays it beautifully, and I love when she says, and the feeling is very, very mutual. And MASH as a show didn't have a lot of opportunity for what am I trying to say? As a show, it didn't really have there wasn't a lot of opportunity for sexual heat on the
Yes.
show, right? Unless you were a weirdo and you liked the way that Margaret and Frank went at it, but I always found that to be really grotesque.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's thinking of Douglas MacArthur or whatever. But I mean, the show just didn't have that opportunity. The show just didn't
Have
bother with
that, yeah.
that, And Susan St. James, her performance and the script written by, again, Mike Farrell, is that's pretty potent.
It
It's
is,
pretty
yes.
potent. She sells it really well, where she just says the feeling is very, very mutual, and then she bolts up from the table. Oh, and then ends it with sleep well, which is just such a like a da-da-da-da-da-da-da kind
It is, but it's such also, Rob, a power move
Oh
because
yeah,
because she doesn't even look over her shoulder back at him. She
yeah.
just leaves, right? Like that's basically saying, I, do what you want with this information. I don't care really one way or another. I'm going to be fine. And she just leaves. It's great. I
It's a
love
mic
her
drop.
for it. Yeah, mic drop.
Real
Exactly.
mic drop, real mic drop. So then we get Aggie in Margaret's tent, and they start sort of talking about, she mentions camaraderie, and Margaret is, and she says, loneliness. And Margaret's like, loneliness, don't get me started. And she says, there's a lot of camaraderie around here between the doctors and the nurses. And Margaret's like, you mean camaraderie? Yeah. And Margaret has a very mature view of it. She says, we're all adults. If it's discreet, people camarade all they want. And then, she says, oh, you mean the discreet like Pierce? And Margaret kind of laughs and she says, oh, he's a hopeless case. And then there's a really great little detail where she says, what about Honeycutt? And Margaret finds that very funny. She says,
Laughs
BJ,
at it. Yeah.
yeah, BJ, oh, that's a laugh. And she goes, no, never. And
Yeah.
I love that we now learn that she never heard
About Carrie.
about Carrie. We don't, she,
Yeah.
that never got to her. I just love that we know that detail now.
I know. I love that too. I think it's a nice little Easter egg if you pay attention in sequential order.
Yeah, I think that was great. And I love, even though it's incorrect, I love that that's Margaret's reaction, right? I love that
Yes.
she is like, oh no, be, you know, no.
Right.
I love
Just,
that.
yeah, brushes it off as just the most absurd thing that could possibly happen.
Yeah. I just think that's, I think that's a wonderful, even though again we know it's wrong,
Right. It's wrong.
it's a wonderful compliment to BJ that his reputation is such that to Margaret she's like, oh, that's just, that's laughable, that's
Yeah,
just very
exactly.
silly, you know what I mean? And that's great. I think that's a wonderful thing to be able to say about someone, that you never got that vibe from them, that they had a wandering eye or anything like that. So I think that's
Right,
just
he's
really
not
terrific.
incurable like Hawkeye.
Like Hawkeye is, right? And of course, when she says the doctor, she's really only really talking about Hawkeye and Winchester at this point,
At this point, right, yeah.
So it's kind of a limited pool that we're drawing from. So that's the act break, and then we come back, and it's the next morning, and Winchester and BJ are talking, and Aggie is sketching. As someone who has drawn, hand drawn a great many things, it is always a slight pet peeve of mine that when actors are shown drawing something,
Yeah.
we always get them right as the drawing is 98% finished. And so the actor can just go, there, I'm done now. Because obviously they didn't have
Right.
to draw any of it, but it's always the way it is. They're always like, oh, we're just catching them just as
Just
they're
at
two strokes away from
the
being finished. Okay, great. So she wants to draw BJ, and of course Winchester wants to get involved in it. Now, Winchester is flirting, but do you think he's really flirting, or is he just flirting just to kind of be to, he's sensing the vibe between BJ and
He,
Aggie, and he's just getting in the way of it because what the hell?
I think he's just poking the bear, so to speak. He recognizes it. And, after he goes over to Aggie and, compliments the painting and the blandness of Honeycutt, he gives a little smirk,
He does.
right? He knows what's going on. And it's crazy to me that he is the first one that we see actively acknowledge, I know what's happening between you two. Out of
Yeah.
everybody, it's Charles.
When he says, I'll be at breakfast, and he does
Yeah.
have a little bit of a grin,
Yep.
and so then Aggie and BJ are talking, and they are in very close contact to the point where he can smell her hair, and he says, you smell wonderful, that's cheating. And then Klinger finally gets an appearance in this episode,
Thank
and
God.
I look, she says, oh yeah, Klinger, she was just sketching me for Colonel Potter. And Klinger's like, that's funny because her art stuff is way over there.
It's so good. It's such a good call out of BJ. Call him out.
I love that he's having fun here, right? And he goes, bye. And then
He
he walks
starts the
away
three
singing
little words.
three little words, this little song, three little words, which is great.
Yeah.
So,
And I want to point out that BJ's word choice of that's cheating is very, very interesting. Because it could be read in two different ways, right? Obviously, cheating, what, temptation, right? But I think it's also BJ trying to put some rules around what's going on, not just for Aggie, but for himself as to what's acceptable and what isn't. And then it's backed up when, Klinger and says something to him and BJ defers to Aggie as Miss O'Shea, not Aggie, not Ag. Right, it's now Miss O'Shea. So I think he's trying to establish some sort of boundary for himself. It's just interesting to me that of all the words, he picked cheating.
That's very, I'm picturing you with like a notepad with BJ on like a psychiatrist couch, you know, you're just sitting there going, it's very interesting, Captain
That would
Honeycutt.
be like my dream thing. I would just love to psychoanalyze this man.
BJ, I think we've made a lot of progress in this session. So,
That's right.
they have this conversation where he says, "How did you sleep?" And she says, "Oh, I slept like a rock." And or she says something, "I didn't sleep." And he says, "Oh, I slept like a rock." He says he slept well. Then Hawkeye shows up, tries to get in the middle of it, and then he asks, "Aggie, how are you feeling?" And she's like, "Why?" And he says, "Well, the big fellow was up all night, tossing from pillow to post." So, oops.
Yeah, so he calls BJ out, right? He blows BJ's cover. That lie is blown wide open, and Aggie throws back into his face like a rock. And not to jump too far ahead here, Rob, but the next beat is that BJ finds out that now Scotty is dealing with tamponade, right? So now it's escalating. Scotty's physical condition, now there's something serious and needs to be monitored. BJ just went through three separate people recognizing there's flirting between him and Aggie in broad daylight, and Hawkeye calling him out on it. Now he needs to pay attention and monitor the situation for himself. So again, Scotty's physical condition is escalating. What's happening with BJ emotionally is now escalating.
Well done. Well
Thank you.
done. Well done, Shannon. So yeah, BJ is talking to Scotty, and then he says to BJ, "How are you doing?" And BJ's kind of like, "What?" And he says, "All the nurses can seem to talk about is that you and Aggie, and now you're dot dot dot," which is incredibly unprofessional.
100%, 100%.
To be talking so loud that the patients can overhear it. I mean, you can't, you know, what can you do? You
Yeah.
can't, you know. And then BJ kind of begs it off. And Scotty is like, "What do you mean? You don't like Aggie?" And he kind of gets offended by her behalf. And he says, whoa, slow down. I like Aggie, I like her a lot. And he says, "I also like Hawkeye, steamed clams on my Aunt Shirley, not necessarily in that order." Which is funny because I think he'd probably be putting Hawkeye further down on the list at this particular moment.
As I say, the joke is he likes clams more than Hawkeye.
There you go. Oh, by the way, so Mashblair is big on the theories that BJ's a big liar, that he lies about lots of stuff. Is Aunt Shirley real, or is that just a he's just saying that as like, I have an Aunt Shirley, because it sounds like a fake relative.
It does sound like a fake one. I don't know because later in the series he has an Aunt Selma as well. So I don't know. Who knows with him? It could be a lie. It could be true. It's part of the fun of BJ Honeycutt. You just don't know.
He's an onion that we're constantly peeling and finding
Yes.
more and more layers. And so Scotty even says, "You know, I want to make sure that you're treating her right." And BJ's like, "You know, don't worry about it." And then Scott even says, "By the way, you're out of your mind."
Yeah.
And so it's like everyone is
Everyone.
pushing him to commit
Well, and
infidelity.
for BJ to tell Scotty that there's nothing to worry about, I think at this point BJ has or is thinking two different ways. There's two different options here. Either one, he trusts himself more than he did back with Carrie because he knows that he's not going to get into bed with Aggie. And so he trusts himself more. So he doesn't have to worry about that. Or he's recognized that there's something so vastly different about Aggie that he wants to treat her well, whatever that looks like. And I think both of those make him nervous or scare him. The fact that those are his two options. And right, again, it's escalating.
So then we see BJ in the X-ray room, a room we very rarely see, but we get to see it here. and he's looking at Scotty's chest x-ray, and Aggie comes in and he explains that Scotty must have received some sort of blow to the chest, and the sac around his heart is filling with blood, and it is constricting the movement, restricting the beating of the heart. And he says, "I gotta, it may heal on its own, otherwise I have to go in and take care of it." And she says, "You know, how dangerous is that?" And he says, "Well, anything close to the heart is risky." That'll come up again in a moment. But he says, "But I've done it before, and he'll be okay." And then, of course, now that leads them to the next conversation they're about to have. And there's a very curious choice on behalf of Mike Farrell, director, where BJ walks upstage into kind of the recesses of the X-ray machine, which is bathed in red light, which is something we very rarely see on the show. We have seen it occasionally, but not much, mostly in the early seasons where they would show the X-ray room more often. But it's just a interesting visual to have Aggie in sort of the standard colors that we see, the browns and the greens of MASH. But then when we cut back to BJ, he is all of a sudden bathed in this red, sort of passionate light.
And it's a great symbol of our favorite golden boy is once again faltering, right? Because he just got done explaining to Aggie the whole X-ray of Scotty. And again, I probably sound crazy, Rob, but I feel like that is another great comparison parallel to what BJ is experiencing, right? Like he doesn't have a visible wound. There's no damage, right? But the longer that he is away from Peg and from Aaron and from everyone that he knows and loves, the longer that he sees and experiences all these different things that no one should ever see or experience, it all slowly eats away at him. And then you have Aggie come in as like the needle into the sac of the heart. And suddenly he's feeling these things that he didn't realize that he could be feeling again, right? And
Wow.
yeah, look.
I love it.
Right? So, and to have him go into this red light is a great symbol of he's gonna screw up if he doesn't get this under control, right? He's not our golden boy in this moment. There's a real chance that he could falter. And I think it's a really good choice that Mike made to have him in that red light.
And also, what does red mean generally in our culture? It means stop,
It means
right?
to stop,
It's
exactly.
not a green light, it's not a yellow light, it's the
He
red
needs to
light.
get
It
under control.
means stop. So, but then BJ tiptoes over the line where he asks her, "How long will you be in Seoul?" Which is, oh boy. And Aggie gives the answer, which she thinks is the perfect answer. And of course, we're going to learn in the couple scenes later, it is actually the thing that's going to unravel all this, where she says, "How long would you like?"
And this is right after, if you remember back in the O's Club, he was trying to convince himself that there was something wrong with Aggie. But this time, when he says, "I'm not that special," after she says, "You know, Scotty has a very special doctor," now he's trying to convince her that he's not that special. So he's trying to put a stop to things in any way that he can. And Aggie just keeps volleying it right back to him and putting all the control in his hands, right? To ask how long he wants her to be in Seoul or to come back or whatever it is, she's letting him make all the decisions again. And I love that it's putting him in a blender. Like, I think that's what people from Mashable have said before. It's putting BJ Honeycutt in a blender, and I love it.
So then we're in the mess tent and everyone is gossiping about it. Klinger is talking about they've thrown the wine glasses into the fireplace and waves are crashing on the shore and things like that. And luckily we finally get the at least an attempt at some discretion, thanks to Father Mulcahy, who is like, "Please, you know, this is kind of nobody's business." Again, he's taking a very mature attitude about it. He's not judging BJ. He's sort of saying, "It's none of our business. Whatever might be happening, it's none of our business." And then he can't quite help himself because he then says, "Besides, it's wrong simply to assume that they are pitching woo,"
And
which
we
is, of
need to use
course,
that phrase a lot more. That is such a great way to
you want to get
describe
that back in the culture?
it. I think we need to.
Okay.
I think we need to.
It's a way of Father Mulcahy to make something sound as unsexy as humanly possible, right?
Exactly.
It just sounds hard. And of course, Hawkeye and Winchester, even I like Winchester becomes like a little kid.
His
shoulders start to hunch, and him and Hawkeye just laugh. And Pitching Wu, isn't he the Chinese baseball star? And they just find it all very, very funny. And then Margaret puts her arm around Father Mulcahy, by the way, which is very cute. I thought that was a nice little moment, right? It's very, you know, very sweet and warm-hearted. That they're kind of like making fun of him a little bit. You know, they're kind of like, oh, my God, Father. Like, really? That's how you refer to
That's what we're going with.
Pitching Woo. And then right at that moment, BJ shows up. And, of course, everyone stops laughing. And he goes, don't stop laughing on my account. Pause. Unless you were laughing on my account. And
so he came in either he overheard or he came in feeling guilty.
Yeah.
Right.
Both things. Both. Right. I mean, how could he's not that far away and the walls are made of canvas.
It can't be hard
to hear what's going on. BJ storms off. Hawkeye chases after him. Nurse Kelly says Scotty's basically taking a turn for the worse. They got to get him prepped. And BJ has the line about, fine, that's the kind of help I could use. And then we are in the scrub room, and that's when we have this conversation, and Hawkeye starts chiding BJ and saying, you know, come on, you know, you're not even going to let anybody kid you about it, even though clearly something is going on. And then we see how angry BJ is. He's grabbing, like, the box full of, I guess, the gloves, and he's throwing it. I mean, and even the lighting is very dramatic. All of a sudden, we've got these very stark shadows cast, which we never see in the scrub room. There's never that kind of like harsh lighting. And they have this conversation, and it's, you know, again, all props to Mike Farrell, director. There's some neat visual cues there. I love that him and BJ have this conversation with the bed sheets separating them for a little bit. It's just giving a nice visual.
It is a nice visual, and it works really well because, again, Scotty's physical well-being has now deteriorated, and to have BJ, I think, struggles with being emotionally open unless he's like angry, in which case he doesn't demonstrate it very well. And to have him separated from Hawkeye while he's angry with that curtain, I think is a really, really good choice. I think it really pulls the scene together and works really well.
Yeah. It's MASH just didn't get the chance to do a lot of distinctive visuals. And so when it comes up with one, I always have to assume that's the work of the director or the cinematographer, at least. So, and there's some real tension here. And then Hawkeye does refer, he says, you went down this road once before. And, you know, I've said in a million episodes, I love it when MASH refers to older episodes. I love that it rewards the diehard fans. Cause of course I love that. Cause I'm a diehard fan, but I mean, this is the eighth season. If you haven't been watching the show since season five, you might not know what that means.
Right.
But I like that if you did see it, you do know what it means.
You knew it. Right. And it's a nice callback because it gives BJ the opportunity to set the record straight that this is different.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing that happened last time. It's not just about being in bed with Aggie. He's thinking about being with Aggie, which is a whole nother level that he didn't experience last time.
Yeah. And he says, when I, until Aggie showed up, I always thought Peg was the only woman in the world for me. I love when he's having this speech, he's putting on his knit cap and he's folding it way too many times,
right?
He's, okay, I think you got it.
You got it. It looks fine. You're good.
You're good. And he says, she's so different, so intoxicating. I love that Hawkeye goes, uh-oh.
And I think that's Hawkeye realizing for the first time that this is actually an issue for BJ. It's not just physical.
Yep. So then we're in surgery. And once again, we're treated to some unusual lighting. All the lights are off in the OR except for the light right over the patient. Again, we very rarely see that. Usually when they're performing surgery, all the lights are on. It doesn't matter if there's nobody else in the OR. Nevertheless, but again, it's just a nice visual focusing the eye on the nurse and Hawkeye and BJ as they have this conversation. Again, is nice, just, you know, not something we typically saw.
And another layer to that, Rob, if you look at the position of Hawkeye and BJ, they are hunched over Scotty and each of their bodies make a half of a heart. And this is where I need to know if Mike Farrell did that on purpose. Because literally, it's a perfect outline of a heart. And I need to know if that was on purpose or if it's just wishful thinking.
I won't make any promises to you, Shannon, but
It's all right.
I'll mull it over, and I will maybe shoot that.
Once you see it, you can't unsee
I'm looking at it now because I have the episode running as we're talking, and I see exactly what you're talking about. I
Right? It's a
really
heart.
do. It's a heart. It is a heart. It is absolutely the way their shoulders are hunched and their arms are going down. It is absolutely hard. So we'll put a pin on this. Maybe I will bother Mike one more time before we wrap the season up.
Poor guy.
Poor guys. Oh my God. Another email from Rob Kelly Creative. So then Hawkeye has, starts talking, and he says, people in common have nothing, have nothing in common. And he says, look, like Aggie and Scotty. And he says, you think they'd be friends back in the States? Nah. He says she'd be dazzling editors at the New York Times, and he'd be hanging around with the malt shop with Emmy Lou. Now, and he says, and they make an eye contact. Now, obviously, he is not drawing a one-to-one comparison to Scotty and BJ. He is not saying BJ's an unsophisticated rural kid, kind of, who has no life experience versus Aggie, who lives this very cosmopolitan existence. But he is just sort of saying, you're a suburban dad with a kid, and you're not a guy who's going to, galas at the New York Times the way Aggie is. So he's making that connection there.
He's making that connection, and I think it also opens the door for another thing for BJ to possibly spiral about is if he's questioning, would him and Aggie have ever had an opportunity to meet, and he's gotten this close to her that fast, what about everybody else that he's made a close connection with while being in Korea? What about Hawkeye? Would him and Hawkeye have ever actually met, right? Out if the war hadn't happened, right? And so, or anybody else at the 4077. And so that's got to be a tough thing to eventually reckon with of these people that I rely on and I'm with day in and day out and care about. Is there enough there to sustain that outside of the war? And so I think it goes back to that whole idea of artificial intimacy. Did the situation just create these relationships for me? And what do I do outside of that situation?
Yeah, it is. It's something you learn in life if you have a big change in your life, and you're like, which friends stay in your life and which ones don't. You know what I mean? Like I mentioned them before. My wife and I moved to Florida, and we left all of our friends, and some of my friends I am still very close with, and some I'm not. And you just see, oh, okay, the distance is the thing that's putting a damper on this.
And that's a
This
hard thing to
relationship.
reckon with and to deal with because the people that you thought you were super close with and could rely on suddenly aren't there anymore.
It's a very different set of experiences. So then we cut to my one tiny flaw with this episode is we cut to the conversation of BJ and Aggie in Margaret's tent, and I just wish we come into this conversation in medias res. Like they're already having the conversation we join it. I just wish there had been a little more of a buildup. It
I
just feels a
agree.
little abrupt that we're right in the. I wish that we had, because at one point he looks up and he looks through the door of the OR and he gives Aggie the A-OK sign. Scotty's going to be okay. I just wish there had been 5 seconds of them walking to Margaret's tent or just something, as opposed to
Something.
jumping right into them in the middle of it. It feels
It's
a little
very,
abrupt.
it does. It feels very jarring because Aggie's first line in that scene is everything you're saying sounds so final. What did he say? What was he saying?
And he talks about it. Everything is because of the war. I eat, dream, sleep because of the war. I found you because of the war. I don't think that's enough for two people. He says, I can't. We can't go from I just met you to I love you. And then she says, BJ, for whatever reason, you mean something to me. I don't have to go, or I can come back. And that is the thing that, triggers him, where he not triggers him, but that's the thing that he realizes is the problem, where he says, you're free. You can come and go as you please. And he's like, I can't. I live in an insane situation here. And he, of course, I mean, we learned just a couple episodes ago how much he resents Radar for being home. And you have to, on some level, if you envy somebody too much, that envy turns into resentment, I think, for pretty easily can turn into resentment. And I that's a lived experience I've had where there's people you are like, all of a sudden you're like, okay. This is not some great feelings I'm having here because I'm so jealous of some other situation somebody has. And if you realize that, yes, if he had pursued a relationship with Aggie and they had gone to Tokyo and had this wild weekend and then he had to go back to this crap.
Yeah.
And she was going to get to go on a plane and do whatever. That would have been such a killer.
Such a killer. And I've got to wonder if he thinks it's easier to be so far away from Peg and not have any sort of a situation dangling in front of him where it can make it a bit harder. He's away from Peg. He can't see Peg. He can't do anything with Peg. Maybe he thinks that's easier to swallow than going with Aggie, doing whatever with Aggie, enjoying himself, and then being ripped away yet again. Right? It's kind of like the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. He's been dealing with being away from Peg. It's got to just be easier to choose to just keep living like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so Aggie doesn't make it any easier on him.
Because no, he doesn't.
He says, look, he says, I only have a lifeline and that's back to San Francisco. And it's basically the only thing that's keeping me sane. And he says, does this make any sense at all? And, you know, she says, yes, it does. And she's like, you know, basically says, you know, I hear you. And he has this great line. He says, I have to live for tomorrow because for me, there's no now.
Yes.
Which is which delivered poorly might be a clunker of a line, but Mike Farrell delivers it really quite well. I like the way he says it. And it's like, yeah, he doesn't have a now. And so he needs to have it gone tomorrow. And so Aggie just then makes it even worse and says, okay, honeycut. But just basically everything you just said just makes me love you all the more.
Yeah. And I love Aggie. Don't get me wrong. I'm a big Aggie O'Shea defender, but that's laying it on a little thick, right? Like, because where did that come from first off? And, you know, previously, well, BJ, what he says that the feeling is very, very mutual, right? Like a callback to Aggie when she says the attraction is very, very mutual, right? Yep. But previously, he couldn't even admit that he liked Aggie without a bunch of caveats. And now suddenly the feeling is very, very mutual.
Mm.
So that escalated really quickly. That whole I love you part has just never sat well with me. And I'm glad that Mike didn't have BJ say it to Aggie explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
It's like BJ is choosing from this point forward that is reserved just for Peg. I'm just going to exist to get home, to get back to Peg and Aaron. And starting now, I'm not going to reciprocate with the actual words, I love you. I'm going to have you read between the lines instead.
Yeah, I think they would have realized the audience would have maybe really turned on BJ if he said those exact words. Yeah,
that's
I agree.
True.
I'm interested in your opinion here, and I don't want to put you in a situation where you feel like you sound judgy. So that's not what I'm trying to get at.
No.
But what I'm wondering is, what are your feelings about Aggie saying she loves him after knowing him 24 hours? Is that a little like, Aggie, come on. Like, really? I don't know. For all we know of Aggie, she could be the kind of person who loves the excitement and spark of romance. And then the minute it becomes a long-term thing, she's disinterested.
Right.
You know, she might be one of those people. I like to think I'm a fairly romantic person. Maybe my wife would argue with that. I don't know. but I am a little like, you love him 24 hours into this, Aggie? Like, okay.
Yeah. The only thing I can say is it's got to be like a powder keg of emotions being in this situation, right? And so I think emotions are amplified just by the nature of the environment that they're in. And so maybe what she's feeling, she thinks is love. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I love BJ Honeycutt, right? Like I sympathize with her, but I don't know if what she's feeling is true love or if it's just amplified and artificial, like the intimacy that has been created between the two of them.
Did you ever watch Mad Men? You ever seen that show?
I have not, no.
There is. I watched every episode of that show, and I thought it was great. And there's a. I mean, anyone who, even if you haven't seen the show, I'm sure most people are familiar with Jon Hamm as Don
Him.
Draper, who's a serial cheater on his
Okay.
wife there. And there's a whole storyline where he has an affair with a colleague at the ad agency, and after the relationship gets a little complicated, he bails. And the woman that he is speaking to chastises him over the phone. And she has this line where she says, "You only love the beginnings of things." And I thought
Oh.
that was a really terrific line. And it's always sort of stuck with me, even though, I only saw that episode one time 15 years ago. But that idea that there are people like that, right? They love the passion, they love the excitement, they love the, but then
Katie.
when the love settles into a different groove, they're no longer interested. And if you're the other half of that relationship, that's a problem. And
That,
so
yeah.
Aggie might be one of those people.
She might be one of those people, and it's. This is why I think she should have been one of those characters that we see again in some capacity, because I think there's a lot to her that could have been dug into with BJ or without. I think she could have been a really interesting character to follow a bit more.
Spin off anybody? So
Yeah.
Aggie O'Shea, Tuesdays at 8:30 on
Yeah.
CBS. So they hug and BJ leaves, and that is the main act break of the show. So then we come back for our bumper, and Aggie has delivered the care package as she promised. There is the bottle of scotch for Hawkeye. There is the bubble bath for Margaret. Hawkeye, of course, makes another joke. He says, "Let's get drunk and take a shower together." And then there is PB&J in glass jars. By the way, this would have been before plastic jars, so maybe that's part of the reason why you don't have a lot of peanut butter and jelly, is
Right.
because the glass is going to break, getting to a war zone and stuff like that. And then Potter says, "Look at what I got, an Aggie O'Shea original." Now, I have to say, the drawing that we see looks nothing like all her
It
other
looks
work.
no, nothing, nothing like it. No.
I think almost like it was drawn by somebody else. And, I never want to be too critical of other artists' work because, good Lord, I've put out some bad stuff in my years due to deadlines and whatnot, a lack of inspiration. This, I like the other pieces of see. This kind of looks like a caricature you would get at a theme park a little bit.
Yeah, I don't want to criticize it because I could not do better, but I don't think it looks like BJ at all. It's just, it's not great.
It's just, it's not, it doesn't radiate passion or
No.
a deep feeling for your subject. You know what I mean? Like, it just
Right.
feels like that kind of thing. It just doesn't feel very emotionally tied. But okay, whatever, it's fine. And
But
he
there
said
is,
he,
oh, God.
no, you go.
I was gonna say, but she did include the lifesaver, right? The
She
rope
does
tied
include
in.
the
And so
lifesaver.
I mean, that whole rope metaphor for BJ tied to Mill Valley appears later on in Bombshells. But I think that's another thread to tug on
Good
later. But
callback, Shannon. I like that.
thank you. But I always kind of took the lifesaver being included as Aggie's subtle way of telling BJ that she gets it,
Yeah.
she respects it. Right. And at the end of the day, him surviving and making it back home was more important to her and in general than anything that could have happened between the two of them. And so I think it's really important that she included that and that message, that subtle message that only BJ would get.
Yeah. By the way, I said in the synopsis that the lifesaver says San Francisco. It doesn't. It says Mill Valley
Okay.
specifically. And every single mention of the San Francisco area on this show made me want to move to San Francisco. Haven't done it yet. We did go there for our
Yeah.
honeymoon, so that was great. And I got to go to some of the places that BJ, Sausalito and things like that. So, but every single mention of this area, I was like, yeah, I want to go.
You
I
want
want to go where BJ, go where the Honeycutts lived.
to go?
says, "Yes, BJ, what does that mean?" And he just says, "Beats me." And that is the end of our episode. War Correspondent, terrific show.
Great episode. Great episode.
Now, before we get to the favorite line or joke, do you have any other insights into the character of Mr. BJ Honeycutt that you want to share before we get to the favorite lines?
Oh, Rob, how much time do you have?
I,
In my email to you, I said, let's have a BJ off.
you know, it's a podcast. We could go as long as we want.
I could talk for anyone that knows me knows I could talk for quite some time about BJ, but this episode, we've seen him spiral and start to decline. I said that before a bunch of times before this episode, but this one really hits home because it's so subtle how he starts to decline. And it's not that he blows up. It's not that he's yelling and punching people. It's an emotional and internal fight with himself to make sure that he returns back to Peg and Aaron the same man that he came to Korea as. And that's all BJ wants at the end of the day. And it's so sad that at this point he still hasn't realized that he's not the same, but he's desperately trying to be. And I think this is one of the best episodes in the lineup.
It's a good, it's a really good show. Great performance by Susan St. James. Often when an actor who isn't a regular writer on the show, as like Mike Farrell was not out, like Alan Alda wrote a ton of episodes. So a bunch of them are going to be about Hawkeye, and you can't blame him because he wrote so many. When an actor only gets a chance to write a couple of episodes a season, if he gives one all about himself, it could look a little indulgent, right? It
It
could come
could.
across as like, oh, of course, you're writing an episode all about yourself. But this
Right.
one, I think this one really works. And this, again, shows us a flavor of BJ that we had not seen before. And we really kind of won't see again, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm fine with Aggie being the one person who kind of just caught his eye a little bit in a way. And that sent him into this real spiral. And
Yeah.
so yeah, a great job, Mike Farrell, actor. Great job, Mike Farrell, director. Great job, Mike Farrell, writer. All across the
Great
board.
job, Mike Farrell.
Great job, Mike Farrell. So okay. Well, what is your favorite line or joke from the show?
So I think I'm gonna have to probably go with he's not regular army. Yeah, he's like a 39 short, which it's so stupid, but it's so funny. And this isn't a line or a joke explicitly, but when Aggie and Potter are in Potter's office, and Potter, Aggie asks Potter if he's ever done a drawing of BJ, and he said, I've thought about it, but I'm not too good at teeth, and it's a hard jump to the O's Club. That to me is absolute comedy because Mike does have a lot of teeth, and to just hard cut to something else, it's so funny. So probably those two things.
All right, fair enough. My favorite line is actually not a joke. It's when Hawkeye and BJ are operating, and Hawkeye first brings up Aggie, and BJ responds with this great snippy, "Will you knock it off?"
Would you knock it off?
I love the way he says that. He is pissed.
He's not having it. He doesn't want to hear it.
He very rarely talks to Hawkeye like that. And he can't be as snippy as he wants to be because the nurse is there and the anesthetist is there. But I just love the quiet way that Mike Farrell delivers that. "Will you knock it off? Like, I'm really serious, dude. Knock this off." And BJ and Hawkeye presses on and makes his point because
And
he's a
makes
good
his point.
friend. But I love that.
Yeah, that's a really good line too, and it just hits home how bothered BJ is by this, and it's no fault of Hawkeye's. But BJ just doesn't want to hear it, at least not right then and there.
Yeah, right. Maybe in the swamp, right, when they're alone, but
Right.
not in front of
Not
everybody else. But
when
yeah, I
he's
just
trying to take care of Scotty, who means
working on the
something to
guy's
the enemy.
heart, for God's sakes.
Exactly, like maybe this is a conversation we should have later.
Yeah. Terrific, terrific show. Terrific show. Well, Shannon, thank you so much for coming on. When you pitched your episodes to me, they were all BJ episodes. So,
Shocker.
because I couldn't deny you the love, the BJ Honeycutt, very popular in Mash Blur circles. So I'm so
Yes.
glad we finally got a chance to do this. So thank you for doing the show.
Thank you so much, Rob. It's been a lot of fun.
So thank you all for listening. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of MASHcast on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can find me on Blue Sky under Rob Kelly Creative. And if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, please go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. There you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name-checked on a show of your choice. So a big salute to Adam Ackerman, Dennis Bailey, Daryl Clark, James K., Michael Kelly, David Mann, Matt McLean, Lisa P., Brady Palmer, Joe Perino, Stan Peel, Michael Porter, Nicholas Prom, Rob Riley, Adam Sanders, Stefan Van Schaik, Britt Schramm, Billy Schumann, and Mike Thomas. I would send you all a jar of peanut butter if I could. So thank you all for listening. We will see you next week. But until then, that is all.
Listen, listen. If there's anything you need, want, or desire, especially desire, you have but to ask.
Really? Oh, there is something that I'm kind of curious about.
What? What? If I don't know the answer, I'll make one up.
Is BJ always so quiet?
BJ who?